Welcome to the Business of Behavior podcast, hosted by Dr. Becca Tagg. We support clinicians who have been bitten by the entrepreneurial bug, looking to strengthen their practice to better serve their clients, employees, and themselves.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of the Business of Behavior podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Becca Tagg. Today's topic comes from one of the posts that was in the ABA Business Builders Facebook group about efficiency and how we are all looking to be as efficient as possible. And I think one of the most important places to be efficient, and one that we often overlook, is in the onboarding process. So onboarding really refers to the process of bringing an applicant on and the entire process of bringing them up to being a competent employee. It's so much more than just that first day of orientation to a company's processes and procedures. And yet, a lot of times, that is what we think of for onboarding. This topic has been super relevant for me over the last 6 months as I moved to North Carolina and have started our business all over again here. And I realized that quite a few of the practices that we were using during onboarding, but others as well, were not actually efficient. And it showed because we hired a bunch of people all at the same time. So it really magnified the areas that needed strengthening that maybe I didn't notice when we had hired one or two new people. So I did a bunch of reading, watched a bunch of videos, talked with other business owners, and came up with some information that I hope is helpful. Hopefully it helps you guys craft a strong onboarding process from the very beginning. And we know that as behavior analysts, antecedent interventions are really the way to go, and that applies to all behavior, including that of a company. So some data that I found, since we are all behavior analysts, we love data. So companies that have an engaging onboarding program retained 91% of their first year workers. That's amazing numbers. And Entrepreneur Magazine shared that 15% of respondents in a study that they did in 2014 that was made up of 1,000 U.S. workers said that a lack of an effective onboarding process contributed to them quitting or considering quitting. That's pretty significant. Particularly for small companies, 15% of people might be three people, or might be, that 15% might actually be much higher in a smaller company because you're not doing as much hiring. So there's also this sort of neat thing that happens when a new hire walks into your office or your clinic for the first day. They experience this psychological phenomenon called premature cognitive commitment. And essentially, it's when a person enters a new situation and they're anxious and insecure. And so starting a new job certainly qualifies. And so the person might jump to conclusions based on a small sample of experiences that essentially then lead them to be making rapid judgments about the entire company. So the first time the new hire comes in, their antenna is up, right? So especially in those first few weeks or even months, actually, they're trying to make sense of what this place is all about. What did I get myself into? Do I want to stay here? And if they don't feel welcomed, or if the new hire orientation is boring or sloppy, then they're far more likely to come to the conclusion, whether it's true or not, that this is a poorly run company, that this is not a company to be proud of. So everything matters in terms of the new hire experience and how it shapes how they think and feel about their new employer. This makes it even more important for the onboarding process to go smoothly and be efficient. It's really the first interface that a new hire has with your company as they become a part of the company. So I'll share a few ways that make a few ways that we can make a great first impression through the onboarding process and to be efficient, right? And so we'll also talk, or we're going to talk about the buddy system, automating processes, using social media, and then opening a feedback loop. As I'm sitting in my kitchen recording the podcast, I'm actually thinking about an interview that I did last week. And I really liked the gal. She didn't have a ton of experience in behavior analysis, but she had a great attitude. And I'm a big believer in hiring for attitude and training for skills. And she didn't have as much experience, not just with behavior analysis, but really with kids with special needs. And so we arranged for her to come in and observe in the clinic the next day. Actually, it was later that day, just so she could get used to and get some experience and exposure really to autism. Well, of course, when she came back, it was sort of gnarly. We had, you know, two kids having major meltdowns with other staff, and I had jumped in to help out, which in hindsight was probably not the way to go because, well, for a variety of reasons, that's probably for another podcast, but I think that was stressful for her, and then I wasn't there to help her navigate interpersonally, like what was happening. Like, gosh, this must be hard to see. How are you feeling? Like, I didn't process that with her. I jumped right in with the kiddo. And she actually emailed me and said that the next day she emailed and said that after thinking about it, she doesn't think it's a great fit, which I appreciate knowing before she comes aboard. And I have to own that some of that is because of exactly this this phenomenon and some of these things, is that it wasn't maybe the most well-planned or well-executed way for her to observe. Okay, so hiring new team members is an exciting time. I mean, it means that you're growing, and expansion is usually positive. It's often related to being excited about ideas and experiences that new team members might bring to the table to help enhance your services. There's a ton of information that we give to new hires right away. I mean, we're sharing our values as well as policies and procedures. We're introducing them to new colleagues and families. And honestly, in some cases, introducing them to ABA, which may be totally new to some people. And that's a lot of information. So if we think about when we're presenting new information to our other learners, like our kiddos, what do? I mean, we chunk it. And so I think chunking is a great strategy that we can use with onboarding as well. So if you're not familiar with chunking, it's essentially breaking down a large task into smaller, more manageable tasks. So you can create a checklist to guide the orientation process, or maybe even break down what they need to know in the first 30 days, then another one that's a little bit bigger that is for the first 60 days, and then for the first 90 days. And so this really causes us and requires us to think really intentionally about what information we're giving, in what order, and how much. Because we know that best practice for our learners would benefit from applying the same principles for our employees, right? Because they're learners, they're just not our clients, right? They're learning the way of our company, or they're learning ABA. And we also know that the first 90 days are the most critical for long-term success within a company. And that first 90 days of a new hire, that is. So onboarding can be very expensive to a company, and many new hires are probably unaware that we really invest a lot of money and time for new hires before they ever see a client, particularly if they're new to the field of ABA, and if your clinic or your agency has everyone be registered behavior technicians or sends them through the RBT training if they don't already have it. And this cost makes it, again, absolutely imperative to be as efficient as possible. So I encourage efficiency in all areas, and we can talk about that in another podcast in the future. And this one will just really focus on the onboarding process. So there's a few ways to increase that efficiency in other ways, right? So sometimes we have to outsource, right? And so there gets to be a point where we simply cannot do it all. And sometimes we languish in that period and stress ourselves out rather than passing on tasks. And so I often kind of have the mantra of just because I can do something doesn't mean I should be doing something. And onboarding is a great place to hand over some of those tasks. So onboarding is about introducing the person to the company, again, the values. And I'm sure we've all heard the saying, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression, right? Whether it's with new hires or a date or new families. So one of the things I learned was the buddy system. So you can assign a buddy, so essentially a fellow employee other than the supervisor, who can give advice and guidance on different aspects of working at your agency. The buddy can also serve as a sounding board who really offers encouragement as the new employee sort of acclimates to the company culture and workplace. And so while that sounds great, then it's like, well, if the buddy can't be a supervisor, who's going to be a buddy? And I think thinking about this as maybe another step before, becoming a supervisor, right? So how do we create gradients within our field of line staff or RBTs or technicians? So a successful buddy is going to be somebody who really understands your culture and environment, and also somebody who wants to do it. This is not the time to voluntold somebody to do this, right? So they also have to have the time to be accessible and available to the new employee. We have two gals who are excellent. And as I was learning about this buddy system, I was like, gosh, they'd be great. And then I looked at their schedule and they just don't have time. And so while they have a lot of the skills, they do not have the time. And that is super important. So a successful buddy is also going to be somebody that is familiar with that employee's role. They should be a solid performer. They should be a good communicator. They should exemplify your values. They should be patient and compassionate, and they should be a leader, so other people should like them. Individuals could volunteer to be considered a buddy or be recommended by others, but again, even if they're going to be recommended by others, we want to be sure that it's something that they want to do. Completing those values questionnaires might be a nice way to kind of find out what the person wants to do, right? Again, I sort of mentioned a little bit, but this can be another way to add to an individual's position within the company. So it shows that they've got skills, they're committed to quality. Maybe there's a raise associated with it. A lot of the information that I've sort of consumed about hiring millennials is that they're really looking for frequent change. And so so being able to change or add different things to their work schedule or their position can be a way to help them feel satisfied. And it provides something positive to the agency overall, particularly to the new hire. So ideally, this buddy situation or the buddy relationship is a formal process. It's not sort of, oh, hey, here's your buddy, but really, you know, explain it. It'll be a 6-month relationship between the buddy and the new employee. And then towards the end of the 6 months, they can kind of discuss how it went, how they want to continue it outside the structured buddy role, if that feels like something that would be a good fit for them. So on the employee's first or second day, you want to introduce the buddy and the employee. The introduction can be facilitated by the supervisor or if you have an HR person or by you, but you want to be sure that it is presented as important. And I think presentation is everything, right? So if you cook me the best steak, but you serve it to me on a trash can lid, it doesn't matter how good the steak is because I don't want to eat off a trash can lid, right? So think about your buddy as that steak, you know, present them in a way that shows their value so that the new hire sees that value. You want to also discuss the buddy's role and responsibilities as well as the employee's needs and then answer any questions, right? You want to be sure that the buddy and employee meet during that first week, maybe for breakfast or lunch, so that they can build rapport and suggest then that the buddy and the employee can decide, again, specifically on when are they going to meet, where are they going to meet, for how long, what topics might they want to discuss. I mean, the structure will vary, but you want to be sure that there is structure there. what is most important, again, is that arrangement is clearly defined and works for both of them. An example of the sort of buddy system, or where I learned about it, was from MIT, and they had some examples, and I will upload that into the Business Builders group after making the podcast live. So something else that can help in that efficiency of the onboarding process is automating things. I mean, automate everything you possibly can. And our field, particularly related to onboarding, might be pre-recording the RBT training. So whether you use Rethink or Relias or Child Enrichment Center, those are a couple of the ones that I'm familiar with, or whether you have your own. Maybe you want to create your own using an online platform like, I don't know if you say it Lessonly, but it's lesson.ly.com. Again, you can check that in the show notes. Teachable.com, Skillshare.com, or even good old YouTube. I mean, you can record the RBT training, but you can also record welcome videos or task analyses for certain tasks, or review any information that you feel like is really important for new hires. You can embed quizzes in some of the programs, or you could give the quiz to your virtual assistant. So then when a new hire completes a section, he or she can, as in your virtual assistant, can forward the quiz to the new hire score and then give you periodic updates as you request, right? So that's just another way to utilize your virtual assistants. And this takes some of the human connection out of the onboarding process, right? So you want to be sure to still schedule those lunches or meet and greets with other team members while the new hire is going through the onboarding process, particularly if you're going to do some automating. Even emails or phone calls checking in on how things are going can go a long way to help that person feel welcome to the agency or to get a feel for the culture of the company. Another way to be efficient and strong in your onboarding is to use social media. So if you think about any college student today and what they did to prepare to show up to their dorm, I don't know, do people even live in dorms? I'm not sure. But so to show up to the first day of school, you'll find what they did was they probably joined a group on Facebook or Snapchat or LinkedIn or something in advance. So I know that when I was starting my doctoral program, I actually received an invitation for my cohort. I probably before we even got there, actually, I think like a month or two before we even got there, which was great. And so you get to meet potential roommates, you have reached out to friends or made friends, discovered the best place to hang out or where to eat, or made even planned get-togethers for the first week. And so contrast this with the typical experience of a new hire who more often than not just exchanged a few emails with a manager or an HR person at the new company, and then nothing until their start date. So those are two really different feels, right? And so instead, imagine being able to join an active online community of other new hires or those already in the company, those about to join. And then in this private community, the new hires can connect or post pictures or videos or, I don't know, talk about hobbies, get tips or hints from other new hires or, you know, people, let's say, who are at the second month or third month of hiring or having been brought on. And they're forming connections with lots of people before even showing up for the first day. And maybe they'll even meet their new best friend, right? Which I saw a Gallup poll that said that people who have a good friend at work are 35% more likely being committed to quality along with other things, which, hello, we all want quality services, right? So knowing what to expect when new employees arrive on the first day will help reduce anxiety and help them be able to come in and get set up right off the bat. I mean, if we think about learning, it also helps. Because if we think about just physiologically, when I'm anxious or even on the Stairmaster, right? Because physiologically, it's very similar. Our heart rate's up. We're not digesting food. We might be thinking about things other than what's happening in the exact moment, trying to stay upright, get oxygen to all of our limbs. That is not the best time to learn new stuff. And so if new hires are coming in and they're nervous and anxious, they're in sort of this physiologically elevated state, which may actually decrease the efficiency with which they're learning all of this new information. And Lord knows we are throwing a lot of information at them at the beginning. So again, kind of that social media piece. So once a new hire has system access, they can join the online community of practice, use these social tools, and they'll have access to people working in the same kinds of jobs, but it's not you, right? And so that is really helpful. I mean, think about our business builders group. It's really essentially the same thing. Let's see. Many of the new hires are also millennials, which I actually had to Google because I saw so many different dates. So one place it said millennials were people born after 77. So since I was born in 81, in that case, that would count me in. But then I saw another one that said it was actually people that were born 2000 and later. So either way, millennials or even whatever sort of league I fall into, people are already using social media tools. And so it's super easy to join a social community that's connected to the same sort of body of knowledge that they're already doing. And then you also aren't having to go back and find files or go through old email chains, which I'm terrible at. We'll have to do a whole other podcast on managing email, right? But I read an estimate that the average sort of worker, sort of knowledge worker like we are, spends 15 to 30% of their time just looking for information, right? So right there, thinking of OBM, how do we reduce barriers? I definitely want to free up that 15 to 30% of time so that employees can get more work done or be more efficient or even take breaks, right? I'd rather, if we have this sort of pocket of space, I'd rather them spend that time taking a break so then they're coming back refreshed rather than hunting for this information. So the easier we can make it for new employees to find the information, that can be a big first step in improving productivity. So there's also a book called The First 90 Days by Michael Watkins, and he says that the break-even point, so essentially where new hires add more value than they have consumed, is typically 6.2 months. What? Let me say that again, because that is big. So the break-even point where a new hire adds more value than they've consumed is an average of 6.2 months. I mean, that's a lot. And so if we think about, you know, sometimes we have a very narrow view of what the onboarding process is. Maybe it's that first week, but actually we really need to extend that out even longer, right? So again, employee onboarding does not end after that first day. Companies really have to do whatever we can to ensure that new hires are ready to work, socialize, and then track that development to ensure that employees are set up for success. And so tracking development kind of leads me to the last topic for this podcast, which will be opening that feedback loop. And essentially a feedback loop is when output is used for new input, right? So just picture that loop kind of going in a circle. And in this case, it means getting input from employees at different points during that onboarding process and then using that to inform future processes. So there's a company called Tiny Pulse, like tiny, things are small, and then pulse, like your heart rate, that was created by one of the founders of Buddy TV. And that's actually all they do. They help stakeholders get ongoing feedback to not only ensure that the process is moving smoothly, but that employees are happy with the process. So if there's an entire company doing it, it is most likely important, right? So there's three main principles to make it effective. One, the feedback has to be anonymous. People are more likely to be honest when they feel their identity is protected. And let's be real, the only helpful feedback is honest feedback. So we want to use whether it's SurveyMonkey or whether it's Tiny Pulse or paper and pencil in an anonymous Dropbox, whatever, but people need to feel like they can say things without kind of getting shit for it, right? So the second thing is we want to share what we're learning. So leaders have to show what they're learning. This shows that we value the feedback so that people keep giving the feedback. And then most important, we have to act on the feedback. Listening is not enough. We actually have to do something differently. So if you've ever had an employee quit kind of out of the blue, it can be really unsettling and surprising. And for me, at least, it leads to questions of whether other employees are unhappy or what if I'm completely off base of how the employees are perceiving the company. And so that kind of negative surprise happens when we lose touch with what our employees are doing or how they're feeling, or when the idea of employee feedback track is something like an annual survey that then takes 6 months to collect, and then it's analyzed, and then the results are, sort of shared in a blanket statement, like, here are the three things we took away from last year's survey. And then things stay the same with no actionable steps. So we want to share what we've learned, but also how we are going to make changes based on that data. So perhaps collecting responses at multiple times from new hires in the onboarding process, like maybe after the first week, then at 30 days, then at 90 days, and then maybe at 6 months, right? If that is that sort of break-even point, we kind of want to see how we're doing with employees at that time. I mean, I know for me, we conduct quarterly evaluations and surveys about employee sort of satisfaction and happiness, but I don't specifically ask about onboarding. And so that will be changing starting with our next quarter. So today we talked about ways to improve the onboarding process. We talked about the buddy system, automating processes, using social media, and then opening the feedback loop. Growth is a really exciting and stressful and expensive time during the life cycle of the business. And I'd love to hear what works for you guys if you want to share in the Facebook group. Again, ABA Business Builders Facebook group. Again, thanks for taking the time to listen in. Time is one of our most valuable and certainly finite resources, and I so appreciate you choosing to spend that resource with me, Dr. Becca, on the Business of Behavior podcast, and I will see you guys online in the Business Builders Facebook group. Thanks. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Business of Behavior podcast. This podcast came about as a extension from our Facebook group, ABA Business Builders. Definitely come check us out and join us in a collaborative and supportive place for entrepreneurs and business owners, managers, supervisors working within the field of behavior analysis and mental health.